This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Sarah Westerveld, the e-waste project coordinator at the Basel Action Network. Sarah Westerveld is here today to tell us about progress made in addressing the hazards of electronic waste and the e-steward certification program. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Basel Action Network?
Sure. We are a small environmental group located in Seattle, Washington, a nonprofit, and our mission is very focused around trying to prevent the illegal trade in hazardous waste, particularly from developed or rich countries to the developing countries. And our work is based on a United Nations treaty called the Basel Convention. And right now we're working on two primary waste streams. One of them is electronic waste, which we're here to talk about today. And the other is ship breaking, old ships that are full of toxic materials.
Would you now remind us of why electronic waste, such as computers and televisions, is a problem?
Electronic waste is a problem because, first and foremost, it has toxic materials in it, like cadmium and lead and mercury, arsenic. There's some more of these chemicals that are persistent, they don't break down, and they accumulate in the environment over time. Electronic waste is also problematic because they're really a mix of many different materials, as we all know, plastics and metals and glass, and many of them are not labeled, and they're very difficult to separate. So we have both hazardous and non-hazardous materials mixed together, sometimes melted together or snapped together or screwed together or otherwise very difficult to take apart. For example, a circuit board has lots of different components, but they're all attached to each other. So trying to manage this waste stream, particularly if no one is funding someone to do it responsibly, is very problematic because we have toxic materials and it's a very complex waste stream. Unlike, say, a aluminum can that just has one material, aluminum, in it. So we really are challenged with a new waste stream that has a fairly immature recycling industry to deal with it and regulations that are also not up to speed adequately to deal with it.
To what extent do we recycle the electronic waste that gets discarded?
Well, the EPA did a study quite a few years back and determined that only about 11 to 14% of this waste stream is recycled, which is a very small amount. If you consider that we've got metals and glass and things that are completely recyclable and should be recycled, that's really a very, very low number. I think everyone is hopeful that those numbers have gone up a little bit since the study was done, I think in 07. But we don't have hard, fast numbers because many jurisdictions are doing very different things with this waste stream.
For the most part, who is taking responsibility for recycling electronic waste?
Well, you do have consumers who are becoming increasingly educated about the issues and interested in finding solutions. The hard part is knowing exactly what to do. You also have government agencies, particularly solid waste folks, who are increasingly concerned about this hazardous waste stream going into the solid waste disposal facilities and knowingly allowing the lead and cadmium and mercury to go into these landfills and incinerators when they're not intended for hazardous waste. So we have now states around this country, around the United States, that are making an effort because the federal government is not adequately addressing this issue. We have states that are trying to address it. And so we have various, I think there are 29 states now that have passed electronic waste laws trying to deal with e-waste in their state lines in a unique way. And this is giving some solutions to various people. It tends to serve the public rather than corporate customers. So another sector of people who are recycling now are some of the corporate customers who are realizing they've got very serious issues around data security, and they certainly don't want their brand name ending up beside a river in China or in India poisoning people. So corporations are becoming increasingly savvy about managing this waste stream and are looking for responsible recyclers to do that for them.
Would you say more about the issues surrounding recycling? You've alluded to some of them, but would you say more?
What's happening in the United States is pretty different than what's happening in some other countries. Let me just answer your question relative to Europe first. They passed a law quite a number of years ago that requires the manufacturers to take back their products free of charge whenever the consumer is done with them and to recycle them responsibly. So all 27 European nations have these laws in place. Here in the United States, our federal government has not taken that sort of action to address this waste stream. And there's no funding mechanism for anyone to pay for responsible recycling. And so what's been happening for many years is that when electronic waste is collected, it's been actually going to brokers. It's been going to buyers who will then export it overseas, almost always to a developing country, and usually to China, sometimes India, Pakistan, many other developing countries, where in China in particular, they're interested in reclaiming the materials. They're looking for copper and aluminum and plastics in order to make new gadgets for the world. In other countries, for example, many of the African countries, they have very few recycling facilities and they're not looking to reclaim materials. They want equipment that's working and it will allow them to connect to the internet. So we have developing countries that are actually purchasing this hazardous waste stream from the United States. And I call it hazardous waste because under this Basel Convention, the United Nations Treaty for Trade in Hazardous Waste, it very clearly defines electronic waste as hazardous if it contains those toxic metals. And it's a little bit less clear when the material goes for reuse. However, there are now United Nations multi-stakeholder processes that are defining reuse relative to this international treaty. So what's happening with this waste stream is that it's getting exported from the United States because that's the most profitable thing to do. And because the United States is the one developed country in the world that has not ratified this United Nations treaty, the Basel Convention, which restricts the trade in hazardous waste. And so our electronic waste is going to, say, the informal sector in China, where frequently they are using acid baths to pull a little bit of gold out of circuit boards, and then they dump the 100% acids right into the rivers, along with the other metals that they haven't been able to reclaim. They're also burning much of this waste stream, for example, burning wires because they've got copper inside. Well, the problem is when you burn wire in open air temperatures, you're creating dioxins and furans, and these halogenated compounds are extremely toxic. They're very harmful to human health and the environment. And they're also invisible and tasteless and odorless, so people don't even know they're getting exposed to them. So what's happening is that the United States as a country is not really dealing with this waste stream as they are in Europe and even in China now and many other countries. And instead, states are being left to try to figure out how to address this problem. One of the really crucial concerns about states dealing with this electronic waste stream is that states have no authority. They have no jurisdiction over export. They're not allowed to restrict the export of anything that's a federal authority. And so whereas some very progressive states would love to make sure that the increased volumes that they collect are not going to China or India, they have their hands tied in terms of really putting a flat-out ban on exporting the toxic materials.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Sarah Westerveld, the e-waste project coordinator at the Basel Action Network. Our topic is progress made in addressing the hazards of electronic waste and the e-steward certification program. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Has the situation with exporting electronic waste improved at all over time, or has it just gotten worse?
Well, it's a little hard to quantify it because the United States is not actually carefully collecting numbers and controlling its exports. So no one ultimately knows the answer to that question. So all we have are anecdotal stories and programs that are set up. So when we went to China in 2001 and filmed a documentary called Exporting Harm, we saw a tremendous amount of volumes there in the informal sector. We went back to the very same region in 2007 with the 60 Minute show, and we're pretty discouraged to find out that after all our years of work in this field, that there seemed to be an increase in the volumes and also in the amount that was being burned. It had changed. The government was now trying to hide the burning and had created these longhouses where the burning would occur inside a longhouse, still full occupational exposure, no respirators or fans or any kind of air pollution control systems. It's still open air burning, but they were just hiding it from the cameras. And also what we found was that there was much more increased burning in general of everything rather than just the wire. So that was quite disturbing. One of the other things that has been happening just in this past year is that our certification program has been launched, the E-Steward certification program, and it is identifying those recyclers who are willing to go above and beyond inadequate regulations here in the United States or in whatever country they're in, and to actually operate as if their government had ratified this Basel Convention. And the EPA has recently recognized the certification program, and also there is an association of manufacturers who have now recognized the certification program, and they're very interested in using certified recyclers. So what we're seeing now is an emerging interest by government officials who are concerned about this waste stream and corporate customers, even the manufacturers of this waste stream, and of course, all consumers who are looking to the certification program to provide them with some answers to very complex problems. Because if you're a consumer, you're wondering, what do I do with this? Where do I take it? What's in it anyway? And how do I know who the good guys are? And how do I know that they're really doing what they say they're doing? And so what we've been doing is trying to set up a program that would, first of all, define what responsible recycling looks like, and secondly, would provide independent auditing to assure conformance to that standard. It is very challenging for consumers to try to deal with this waste stream when the governments themselves are a bit confused about what's going on in the different jurisdictions.
What is required to get E-Steward certification?
What's required to get E-Steward certification if you're a recycler or a refurbisher or even a refinery is you have to get a hold of the E-Steward standard, which is available on the e-stewards.org website. Integrated into the E-Steward standard, it actually has a global standard for something called an environmental management system. So if you're, say, a refurbisher or a recycler who wants to become certified, you get a hold of the standard and you essentially set up what's called an environmental management system, which essentially is a structure in which you run your business that requires you to have top management commitment to doing the right thing. You put it in writing, you set up systems after you define your targets, and then you implement them, you evaluate your own self, you do an internal audit, and then if you're an E-Steward certified vendor, you hire a certification body who is trained in this program. And the auditor comes in and carefully scrutinizes your entire environmental management system, which has all of the E-Steward's performance requirements built right into it. And the auditor will determine whether or not you as a recycler or refurbisher are actually in conformance with the 50-page E-Steward standard or not. And if you're not, you're given a period of time in which you can try to bring your operation in conformance or otherwise you don't get certified. One additional tier of oversight in this program is that we have what's called an accreditation body that is watching all the certification bodies. So it's really a three-tier system where you have watchers watching the watchers who are then going in and auditing the recyclers. And this is designed to give consumers a high level of confidence that any particular organization or recycler is actually meeting the standard on an ongoing basis.
How often is certification by E-Stewards denied, and what are the reasons?
Well, the program launched a year ago in April of 2010, and there have been plenty of companies who have had nonconformities. In other words, the auditor gets there and does the big audit and says you are not in conformance with the standard in the following ways, and then they usually get up to speed and improve their operation and are given a couple of months to do that. We've actually just had the first case where there was a company that was trying to get audited, but we had been notified by many, many, many sources that there were a lot of concerns about this company. And we actually went and we photographed shipping containers leaving their facility in Chicago. And one of them got rejected by the government in Hong Kong, who we were in touch with. We notified them that this container was coming, and they opened it up and found that, yes, indeed, there was hazardous waste, particularly the old cathode ray tubes and batteries, which were not legal to be imported from the United States. So that company has been denied certification. I'm sure there will be more. Like I said earlier, this is an immature industry that has been free to do whatever they wanted in the past, and now the certification program is really starting to shine the light on what the practices are and really what they should be.
How extensive is the network of e-steward recyclers at this point?
We have had what we call the e-steward's pledge program for a number of years. After our film Exporting Harm came out, we were deluged with questions from the public. This was in 2002. What do we do with our electronic waste so it doesn't end up on the riverside in China? And we said, we don't know, just hold on to it and we'll figure this out. And we worked and created what we call the pledge program, where companies were required to meet a 1.5-page standard as opposed to our 50-page standard now. And we did not do on-site audits, but they committed to keeping the toxic materials out of the developing countries, out of landfills and incinerators, and also out of prison recycling operations. And we did what we call desk audits. We phoned their downstream and verified certain things. And there were many companies who did not qualify to be in the pledge program. But that pledge program is actually sunsetting at the end of this month, August 31st, 2011. And what is only going to be remaining is a certification program. And what we have now in the certification program is about 41 sites that have been certified, so different locations that have been certified, and we have another 100 locations which are contracted with the certification bodies to become certified.
Are they spread pretty evenly throughout the country?
They are spread all around the U.S. We actually even have some in the U.K. and now in Mexico. There's a company in Canada also trying to get certified at this point. And the program right now is available in any of the developed countries. So that's about 40, 42 countries altogether. Right now, we're not allowing the program to be available in the developing world. We have concerns about the additional factors that tend to arise in developing countries. We've been hearing about people being able to just buy a certificate from a certification body and India or wherever. So we're treading very slowly into the developing world and making sure that this program has integrity in the developed countries before we then run a pilot program in the developing countries.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn and my guest is Sarah Westerveld, the e-waste project coordinator at the Basel Action Network. Our topic is progress made in addressing the hazards of electronic waste and the e-steward certification program. Let's go back to the issue of laws that have been passed. Washington State's law passed a couple of years ago. Would you like to specifically evaluate it in terms of how well it's worked out for helping with the electronic waste issue?
Sure. Washington State was the third state to pass an e-waste law, so Washington was very much at the forefront of this movement, and there was a tremendous amount of involvement from very knowledgeable and progressive solid waste officials, local recyclers, the environmental community. And we got to look at what had happened down in California, where they were attempting to create a law whereby the manufacturers would be responsible for collecting and paying for the recycling, just as they are in Europe. The last minute, that was switched and turned into a California state law where the manufacturers had no involvement whatsoever. Consumers would just simply pay a fee when they bought a new product. That recycling fee would go to the state. The state would then hire the recyclers and pay them to collect and recycle the volumes. Most of the other states realized that that was not the way to go. One of the reasons why the Europeans created this model called extended producer responsibility is this need to really involve the manufacturers in dealing with their hazardous waste products, drive them to redesign these products. If they're going to have to pay to collect them and recycle them, they would actually have lower costs if they are non-toxic rather than hazardous waste products in the end. So we wanted to make sure that here in Washington State, we created a law that would absolutely hold the manufacturers accountable financially for this waste stream. So that's what happened. And Washington State has a program which I think does a good job of saying, you need to collect and recycle. You can figure out how you would like to best do this. And you need to, however, use responsible recyclers. So what Washington State has done, they actually created two levels of definitions for responsible recycling. One was sort of a mandatory level, which was the highest recycling standards they thought they could get away with in terms of what's legally allowable for the state to set. And then they offered another higher set of responsible recycling standards and encouraged the manufacturers to voluntarily choose the higher level of recycling standards, which they did. There was enough public pressure and sort of political pressure, I guess, to encourage the manufacturers to say, all right, we're going to choose a higher standard here, which does indeed call for restricting the export to some extent. So Washington State has been quite successful in collecting huge volumes from the public for free because the manufacturers are now collecting and recycling. The program is not without some challenges, however. And one of the challenges is that because the manufacturers are running the show, they are tending to try to pay as little as possible, of course, to the recycler. So it's made it quite difficult for local recyclers to survive financially because they're getting paid less and less and less by the manufacturers who are kind of playing the recyclers off of each other. So we're encouraging the manufacturers to really truly take responsibility and pay for living wages and good environmental protection at the recycling facilities and not try to just get this down to the lowest possible penny per pound.
So if someone recycles their used electronics within Washington State, can they be fairly sure it won't be exported to developing countries?
Fairly confident. I think consumers should know that Washington State is really making an effort to try to limit the export. And because the manufacturers chose this higher standard, there is some restriction on export. Unfortunately, the state of Washington does not have the funding and therefore the staffing to actually go and do on-site audits and to bring in qualified auditors to truly ensure that in practice every single recycler is meeting the Washington State requirements. Instead, what those vendors have to do is to send in an annual report with some documentation about where they're sending materials. So it's better than nothing. And I know that Department of Ecology has worked very hard to try to set up the best possible system that they were allowed to by law. And it's not quite enough because their hands are tied as a state and they cannot fully enforce a ban on hazardous materials going to developing countries. And that's why we really encourage the use of the certification programs. And what's happening right now is that many states who are just in the process of creating electronic waste bills are calling for use of e-stewards and certified recyclers with a very detailed standard and independent auditing and the whole accreditation body watching over the certification body. So there is now a trend for states to move to the certification programs and rely on them.
Would you comment just briefly on the efforts to deal with electronic waste at the federal level?
The United States has not ratified this Basel Convention, the treaty to stop toxic waste from going from rich to poorer countries. And there is a longstanding tradition in this country to have free trade, even in hazardous waste, when it is not happening in other nations. 176 countries have now ratified this United Nations treaty, so we're really an outlier here when it comes to not wanting to restrict our exports in hazardous waste. So what has happened is that the environmental community has gotten together with some lawmakers federally, and they have now floated a bill which calls for the United States to completely ban the export of hazardous electronic waste, not all hazardous waste, but just the toxic electronic waste, to developing countries. And we went through a very careful process with some of the most progressive manufacturers who have now signed on to the bill. I think it currently includes HP and Dell and even Apple, if I'm not mistaken. And these are companies that have been really trying to grapple with the export issue as corporations and choosing to go above and beyond where the existing laws are. So we now have support from both some of the manufacturers, also both Democrats and Republicans, so lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. And the bill has been floated and we'll see where it goes. But it would be a landmark if the United States not only stopped exporting its toxic waste to developing countries, but also kept this waste stream here in the United States. There are good companies here in this country who are very eager to keep this electronic waste here in the U.S. and build jobs right here.
How much progress has been made in the manufacture of greener electronics that have fewer toxic compounds in the first place?
I'm not an expert in what the latest is in phasing out the toxins, and there are a couple of environmental groups that work on that. Clean Production Action is a very good one. But I can tell you that there are many things trying to drive manufacturers to phasing out toxins. There was a law passed in Europe called ROS, the Restriction on Hazardous Substances, which has really pushed manufacturers in a large way, for example, to phase out the use of lead solder. At first they said, oh, we can't possibly find a substitute for lead solder. And of course, they had to invest time and money into it, but they did. There is now a lot of push from the environmental community to phase out many of the other toxins like mercury and some of the brominated flame retardants in the plastics, which are very problematic. And so what we see now are some voluntary efforts on the part of manufacturers to start phasing out various toxins. Greenpeace also has had a green electronics report card for a number of years where they are pushing manufacturers and grading them on their efforts to phase out various toxins and also to take back their products. So we have a combination of a few laws occurring in other parts of the world, which are encouraging manufacturers to change their products globally, and also the environmental community really calling for this. I think one of the things that's very exciting is looking at some of the prototypes that are coming out. There's a beautiful laptop, I think it's made by Asus, that's got a cover made out of bamboo. And there's another company called ReComputer that's got a cardboard exterior for their CPU, their central processing unit. Their computer tower is made out of cardboard. So if you go to ReComputer.com, I believe it is, it's really quite eye-catching.
What advice do you have for listeners for disposing of their own electronic waste?
The only thing I can recommend, because this is such a challenging recycling industry where there are many, many players doing the wrong thing, are the e-stewards. So if people go to www.e-stewards.org, they'll find a list of recyclers around the country and in some other countries who have actually been certified to this 50-page standard, which was created a couple of years ago by leaders in the recycling industry and the refurbishment industry, as well as the environmental community, and also health and safety experts, occupational health and safety experts down at the California Department of Public Health. These folks are the ones who are meeting the highest standard that's available, and they have been independently audited to assure that they conform to that standard. And the auditors go back in at least once a year, if not more often, to make sure that they're continuing to conform to the standard on an ongoing basis.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think the important thing for people to understand is that this waste stream is a hazardous waste stream, and it also has tremendous amount of value in the reuse market. At least some of the materials do, not all of them. And so the number one option is to try to find a company, an e-steward, who is actually doing refurbishment and will upgrade a unit and repair it if need be, and then find a legitimate reuse market for this product. Then it's not a waste. It's not a hazardous waste under the international laws. So it's very good, first and foremost, to try to extend the life of the product. And if parts have to be pulled out because they've gone bad or an entire unit needs to be recycled, all of this refurbishment and recycling should happen at an e-steward's location, because these are the folks who are going way above and beyond what the requirements are for them to do. And they're saying, we will operate in compliance with these international laws, even though our federal government has not ratified this treaty. And we're also going to protect our workers. We're going to sanitize all the data so that people's personal data doesn't get out. And we are also going to ensure that the toxic materials remain out of landfills, out of prison recycling operations, and only in the developed countries where they will be smelted. So that's my recommendation.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Sarah.
You're welcome, Diane. Thank you.
You have just been listening to Sarah Westerveld, the e-waste project coordinator at the Basel Action Network. For more information, check on the web at ban.org. Again, that's ban.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.